Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Dean Karnazes is our guest. He was called by Men's Health Magazine one of the fittest people on the planet, joining us now. That is the coolest thing ever. I would love somebody to say that about me, Dean.
I've started eating a lot of pizza and drinking beer on the couch since then. I'm kind of resting on my laurels. How's that?
I love that. Yeah, where do you go?
I've fattened up, yeah.
Where do you go from there? You've got a new book out. You're a two-time New York Times bestselling author. The book is called A Runner's High, My Life in Motion. I am fascinated by this. First of all, let's talk about your love affair with running, and then we'll get to why you wrote the book. But where did it start for you, running?
Boy, I used to love to run when I was a kid. Like, I used to run home from kindergarten when I was 6 years old. And then I ran competitively as a freshman in high school. We won the state cross-country championships, and I figured, well, you know, I've gone about as far as I can go in running. So I stopped running at age 15. And then I was in a bar in San Francisco on my 30th birthday, doing what, you know, we guys do on our 30th birthday. I was getting drunk with my buddies. And at midnight, I told them I was leaving. And they said, well, hold it. You know, it's your 30th birthday. Let's have another round of tequila to celebrate. And I said, no, I'm going to run 30 miles right now to celebrate instead. And they looked at me and they said, but you're not a runner. You're drunk. And I said, I am drunk, but I'm still going to do it. And I literally walked out of a bar at midnight in San Francisco. I didn't even own running gear, but I had these comfortable silk boxer, you know, underwear on, these boxer short underwear. So I peeled off my pants and set my sights on a city called Half Moon Bay, which was 30 miles south, and stumbled off into the darkness. And somehow I lived and I made it, and I arrived the next morning and decided at that point I was going to be a runner.
I think, you know, I have done stories before on people who will talk about sort of an addiction to the endorphins, an addiction to kind of the training even. For you, would you say that that you know, you have an addiction with running? Is it a healthy addiction?
It's a strong addiction. sometimes I wonder how healthy is this, but the title of my new book is A Runner's High, and that's kind of, you know, somewhat what it's all about. Is this, you know, runners are passionate people. We're kindred spirits. I mean, you can relate to another runner because you've suffered the same way they've suffered. And there's something about suffering that you know, brings salvation. I have a quote, you know, there's magic in misery.
Yeah, and I love that, too. We've been talking on the show today a lot about defining success. You're somebody who's, you know, you ran across Death Valley, 135 miles. I have to hear about that. But, you know, how do you define success now at the age you are now? You know, at 30, you were running from San Francisco to Half Moon Bay. That was success, making it there. But what about now?
Now it's staying in the game. It's continuing to compete at a high level and continuing to stay true to the man I am. Right now it's all about staying power and longevity. And, you know, think about other sports. I mean, it's unheard of for a 58-year-old athlete to still be competitive. I mean, it's crazy, right? Can you imagine, you know, someone playing hoops at 58?
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. But, you know, I'm still going strong. I'm still running 100-mile foot races. You know, hopefully I'll keep doing that up into my 60s and 70s.
Dean Karnazes is our guest, best-selling author. Book out is called A Runner's High. On the cover of the book, like, you know, you're running, you're on a road. You're not wearing a mask, which is great. Like, you know, I love that people are getting outdoors now. Do you feel like the pandemic has been good for running?
It's been tremendous for running. Running is experienced a boom like none other. I mean, you can look back to like the 70s with the kind of running craze, but running right now is it's off the charts how many people have started running. And, you know, these are not hardcore runners. These are general people that just decide, I'm going to start jogging around the block just for some sanity and for some exercise.
The ultra marathon versus a marathon, a lot of us will look at the, you know, the 135 miles in the desert, and we'll say, you're out of your mind. What is that like? What is that experience like when you are taking on a race of that magnitude?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much unique experience, you know, within the realm of human experiences, and very few people, you know, live through something like that. But I kind of tell the story in somewhat gruesome detail in A Runner's High. You know, I talked about running straight through the night, you know, running when, you know, you're on the verge of collapse and you continue, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. I mean, for most people, the idea of running, you know, for 24 or 30 hours straight is unheard of, right? I mean, you know, putting on a headlamp in the middle of the night and not stopping, you know, most people can't relate to that, right? Most people, if they can run for an hour, they're happy. And I describe running for, you know, 27 hours nonstop.
What kinds of things are you thinking about when you're doing a 27-hour run at that? Because I got to think, my mind drifts if I'm running 3 miles.
You know, mine does too, but when you're in a race like the Badwater Ultra Marathon, it commands your attention. I mean, you know, nothing sharpens the focus like survival.
Yeah.
You know, you need to focus every molecule of your body on getting to the finish line. It is that intense of an experience. So it kind of owns you. Your mind doesn't wander much. All you think about is one thing, and that is reaching the finish line. And everything you do is in accordance with that mission. And, you know, to me, it's very cleansing, because rarely do we focus on one thing for more than a couple minutes these days, or even seconds. But, you know, I'm out there for 27 hours thinking about one thing, reach the finish line.
You know, I have interviewed people who've done Badwater before, and I asked them, you know, what would you be doing if this wasn't your thing? Have you ever thought about that? If you had never found running, what would have been the obsession for you?
Well, I crawled into a bottle for a while, and I could see where that was going. I don't know, John. I mean, I hate to think where I'd be if I didn't start running. I mean, I went through business school. I got an MBA. I was a business guy for a while and just hated it and wasn't very good at it. So I don't know where I'd be if I didn't run.
You found your thing. And again, we're talking to Dean Karnazes, best-selling author and speaker and an icon in the running world. The book is called A Runner's High. What made you want to write this book at this time?
I felt that, you know, I'd started this journey 25 years ago, and my first book was kind of a coming-of-age story about discovering this world of ultramarathoning. And now that I've been immersed in it for 25 years, I thought it was time to kind of reveal the truths. I mean, am I happy? Am I satisfied? Am I, you know, crippled with, you know, osteoarthritis? What's going on here? And how are you able to keep going? I mean, some of it talks about my training, my cross training, my diet, my discipline. And I just thought I owed it to my fans and to others to kind of share this journey and to open some eyes as to, you know, the potential of running, the potential of the human body and the human spirit.
Dean, you know, you have run a marathon to the South Pole. You ran nonstop across Death Valley. 50 marathons, 50 states, 50 consecutive days. That jumps out to me. What is that? What is your body feeling like on like the 30th marathon on that journey?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I remember marathon 19. I couldn't get out of bed. I mean, I literally could not get my body out of bed. And I'm thinking, how am I going to run a marathon today? Let alone, you know, 31 on tie after that. And at that point, I just stopped counting. I just said, you know what, just make it to the sink and splash some water in your face, you know, have a cup of coffee, put on your shorts one leg at a time, and just show up at the starting line and do the best you can. And I just had that same commitment every single day for the remainder of the journey. Just, you know, be the best Dean that Dean can be today and see what happens. And lo and behold, you know, 50 days later, I crossed the finish line. And, you know, I think it was telling, the 50th marathon was my strongest marathon of all. I ran the New York City Marathon in 3 hours and 30 seconds. So pretty much 3 hours flat. And that was after 49 marathons, you know, in 49 days prior. So the human body is incredibly resilient.
There is something that beautiful, too, about, you know, this is your own body, right? It's your own two legs. It's your will. It's your heart. It's, you know, this is your thing. It belongs to you. You don't need to order equipment off some infomercial. You're not, you know, there's no personal trainer who's in your ear for all 135 miles of an ultra marathon. But, you know, for a lot of us, we start things and we don't finish, Dean. And that's kind of, we chalk it up as human nature. What can you teach the rest of us about perseverance and fighting through when things stink or slogging through your day even?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the magic is if you can bring yourself to the present moment of time, to be in the here and now and not think about the future, just execute in the moment of, you know, the moment you're in. And, you know, even as we're doing this interview, I mean, our minds are active places, right? We're thinking about the future. We're reflecting on the past. If you can stop yourself from doing that and just have the discipline to bring your mind back to the here and now, you can get through some really, really tough periods. And, you know, the other thing is running teaches you lessons that carry over from running into, you know, into life. I mean, running teaches you about perseverance, about grit, about, you know, overcoming obstacles. And running proves to you that you're better than you think you are and you can go further than you think you can. And I tell people this all the time, John. I say, you need to run a marathon. And people think that's impossible. Like, I'll never reach the finish line of a marathon. And I tell them that's why you need to do it. Because when you cross the finish line of that marathon, you are a different person than the individual who's starting on the, you know, standing on the starting line. It really changes you in a profound way.
Are you competing against yourself in those moments, or are you thinking about other people on the course?
I always come back to myself. I mean, I'm always, that's the only person you have to compete against. And, you know, I get back to that time and time again. I mean, you can't control the competition, right? You can't control the weather. You can't control so many things. All you can control is yourself. So I'm my biggest enemy, and I'm my biggest obstacle to, you know, to getting to the finish line.
When I was a kid, my parents used to take us and have us do like a 5K as a family. And I thought it was great. Like, it was healthy. We were out. We were doing something together. How early would you recommend people get, you know, their families listening? Is this something you could and should introduce to your kids as a family, or is this something you got to find yourself?
You know, I think a family that, you know, I mean, kids are pretty quick to spot hypocrisy. You know, you can't just fake that you're a runner and go do a 5K. But if you're legitimately and authentically doing it, I think, you know, involving your family at a very early age is really healthy. And people say, you know, when is my son or daughter ready to run, you know, a 5K or a 10K? And that so depends on the child. I mean, some kids are physically ready and able, you know, when they're very, very young to run a great distance. And I think if they have the desire, you know, don't hold them back.
Yeah, and I just think it's such an amazing story. Dean Karnesis with us. Dean, before I cut you loose, the book's called A Runner's High. This is not your first book. You wrote Ultra Marathon Man, which was a bestseller. You got another bestseller. What is it like for you? Maybe compare the journey of writing a book to a marathon. You know, from start to finish, you actually see the finished product. You've got the book in your hands, or it's on the bookshelf at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon. Is there satisfaction in that kind of accomplishment, or is it just running for you?
No, I mean, I think there's parallels between the two. I think both running and writing a book are, you know, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. I mean, it is a lot of hard work, and I derive so much pleasure out of writing a book. And I've also learned that, you know, this book stays with you for your whole life. So I've learned to choose every single word in this book very carefully. And so it's perfect. I mean, I really am that granular. You know, to me, the greatest reward is, you know, when I open my email in the morning and I have 10 or 15 messages from people like, wow, that was an incredible story. Like, I got a message yesterday from a guy that said, you know, I went out on a little jog listening to the audiobook, and 7 hours later I came home. Like, I couldn't stop. So that's very satisfying to hear something like that.
Dean, I appreciate you giving us your time. The book is called A Runner's High, My Life in Motion. Dean Karnesis is our guest. I wish you the best with the book. I know you're getting a lot of positive feedback. We wanted to get you on. Oregon is such a running state. I think there's a ton of people out there that love to hear from you, Dean. So thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
I've done stories and columns before on ultra marathoners, and I always find it interesting. There seems to be a common theme with people who have suffered maybe with addiction and substances, or he talked about crawling into a bottle, who find ultra marathoning and pivot that addiction into a healthier thing. Like, balance, we all should be striving for balance. I don't know that I'm going to go out and run 130. I can tell you I'm not going to go out and run 135 miles across the desert. I'm just not going to do that. But completely respect the perspective of a guy who, you know, on his 30th birthday just said, I'm going for a 30-mile run. That's insane. Coming up, we will talk with the new commissioner of the Pac-12 Conference. Michael Schill will be joining us, Oregon's president as well. That's all coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. The Culligan Water Cooler Report, though, is next. All right, welcome back. This is the Culligan Water Cooler Report. We do it every day on this show in this segment. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. Go to culliganoforegon.com if you want to get your water tested and make sure that your family is drinking safe water. Culligan of Oregon did that for us. They stopped by. They took a water sample from the spigot outside. And the next day, I got a report on what was in the water. If you want to do that, go to culliganoforegon.com. All right, I want to start with a conversation that Anna and I had this morning. Breakfast table, awaiting the Pac-12 conference commissioner news. Got to give some credit to the Pac-12. If you like their hire, don't like their hire. You certainly know that they did a nice job of keeping the circle tight. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, you will hear from Michael Schill, the chair of the Pac-12 CEO group. You'll also hear from the new commissioner making a first appearance on this radio show. That's coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. But Anna and I were at the breakfast table this morning, and we were talking about the definition of success. How do you define success? Not with a sports team, not with a youth sports season, not with grades. Like, it's easy to define success academically, like when you're going to school or your kid's in school, you look at the report card and you look at the grades and you got a grade point average and you can compare yourself or your kid and to their prior semesters or prior academic experiences, and you can gauge what is academic success. But what is success in your life? Think about that. Sports teams. We know what success is. In the NBA, often it's just making the playoffs. In college football, it's qualifying for a bowl game. In Major League Baseball, success, is it making the playoffs? Is it being above 500? I can remember as a Giants fan growing up, you know, wanting the Giants to get that 81st or 82nd win of the season so that I knew in a 162-game season that I was going to ultimately see my team finish above 500 for the year. That was a big deal. Like, I can remember going to Candlestick Park and you know, I was there on Fan Appreciation Day one Saturday or Sunday afternoon and end of the season where the Giants lost their 100th game of a dismal season. And as a fan, I wanted nothing more than to judge success by being above 500. But I've heard people talk about personal success, right? And 10 years ago in my life, I probably would have thought or defined success very differently than I define it now. I've got a high school senior who's going off to college. I have two other young kids who are healthy and active. And, you know, I look around and I think to myself, well, what is my definition of success now and maybe into the future? Because I can remember as a 30-year-old, I was so career-oriented, career-focused. It was about getting to the market and the job that I wanted to get to. It was about doing my job on a daily basis to the best of my ability so that I could advance in my career. But ultimately now, as I look at sort of where I am in, you know, doing this radio show for 14 years and also writing a column at the Oregonian for the last 19 years or so, looking around going, okay, what is success? And I think part for me is being able to do the things that I want to do and not for the money of it, really. Like, do the things you want to do professionally and personally and have the finances of it not playing the, like, the primary role. I think as men, we are often driven in our careers to achieve and to do more and to expand footprint. And I have really wrestled over the last 5 or 7 years with, like, drawing better boundaries in my professional life and not missing those great events that my kids are participating in. And, you know, and I get some crap. I do get some crap from, like, some colleagues. They'll be like, hey, how come you weren't at the spring game? Or how come you weren't here? And you know what? Sometimes I'm not at the spring game because I'm at a more important game.
system.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.